Hi there. My name is Carrie. Thanks for choosing my tree walk today. This is a traveling walk. I want to take you to parts of the Arboretum that connect with the neighborhood where I live. This is a walk about finding home. Thanks for coming with me.
From the main kiosk, turn left and cross the road. Take the short path to your left and follow it to the Wal Customs Memorial Trail. Turn left when you reach the main trail to walk the darker path.
My story has a lot of darker chapters, things people don't talk about, things I'm not even going to talk about. I've been a walker ever since high school, growing up in Toronto. Walking was a key way for me to feel free and empowered as a teenager growing up in a house with an abusive father. As you walk in these darker shadows of the Arboretum, I hope you feel cool, restful, and protected. Trees have such an amazing way of welcoming us into their space. Peter, the elder from Six Nations, who worked with us on this project, told me he likes to ask the forest and the creator for permission to enter spaces like this. What I like about that is how it reminds me of the immense privilege we have when we walk in these spaces. So I invite you to stop here, under the trees, and breathe in the oxygen and give back the carbon dioxide as you exchange with the forest. Take a moment to find something dark and beautiful, maybe something small and hidden, and feel rich from noticing the abundance of forest gifts. Feel free to speak your gratitude out loud. As a singer, I deal in breath and sounds. Have you heard that talking to plants will help them grow? It's not because they enjoy our attention like pets do. It's because you're feeding them the carbon dioxide from your breath.
Once you've taken a moment to enter the forest, head along the curve of the path until you see an even more protected breakaway. It will be on your left. Turn there and follow the alley of pines and spruce. Stay on the wood chip covered trail. When you come to a small fork further along, keep right.
And I was thinking about this project and how I can always choose to frame my story however I want. And how this project could really draw us as participants, but also listeners, towards that sort of thirst for other people's pain, where we go and steal stories from other people's lives in order to sort of satisfy our own pain. If the stories are really well told and well listened to, then they can help people process similar experiences. But there's also the kind of rubbernecking that goes on when we're talking about mental health. And when I try and talk about my own mental health challenges and the trauma that embedded those challenges in me, I always want to be careful not to be too sensational, because my story does come from trauma. And it involves a lot of other people in my family. It's never just my story. It's my mother's story. It's my grandmother's story. It's my brother's story. It's my aunt's story. And it's my father's story. Sometimes I have thought that once all the elders in my family have passed away, I'll be able to tell the whole story. but I think my mom's gonna live to be like 97, and I'm already 47, and so I don't know if it's wise for me to wait all that time to tell the whole story.
In this darker space, I'll tell you a little more about myself. Maybe you can hear it in my voice, but I'm an older student. I'm 47 right now. I have a 10-year-old child, and I live with them and my husband in the ward, sometimes called the Two Rivers neighborhood. I've been a singer all my life, but music became my work around the age of 16. The stories of survival and hope, not just in the words of songs, but often in the lives of the musicians, were a lifeline for me in a tumultuous adolescence. See, a lot of things happened in my family. My father was an alcoholic and abusive, and ultimately he went to prison when I was 16. I think that's when I really felt the most different from my friends, the most worried that my life wouldn't work out, and the most ashamed of who I was. But in music, particularly in jazz, I found a history of people who had dealt with what I was dealing with. I found support in the idea that a spirit could fight back from a rough start and still experience life's adventures. Carry on to where the Walkustens Trail meets the Trillium Trail. Turn left.
I've been reading a book by Joshua Whitehead. It's called How to Make Love to the Land. So Josh Whitehead was talking about trying to like reframe his mental health challenges, which include anxiety and depression and insomnia. And he was trying to talk about how he would reframe that and think of it as like not mental illness, but lessons learned. It could be like ancestral lessons being handed down. And I'm looking at these dandelions and thinking, how would our appreciation of just everyday city environments change if we started looking at weeds as functional parts of the ecosystem?
Choosing to be a musician professionally was a left turn for me. Being raised by a single mother meant I spent a lot of time thinking about work in practical terms. I started going to university in journalism and new media, but I became disillusioned with politics and commerce. Being a musician felt like more honest work to me, and it led to all sorts of adventures, not unlike this one I'm taking you on now.
I sing sweet icicles stabbing your heart. Every time you look at me that way, I fall apart. Should we pack?
As you continue along the Trillium Trail, you'll notice that to your right is dense shrubbery. To your left is a field. Sometimes, in the music I study here at the University of Guelph, improvised music, we use these landscapes as a metaphor to describe how much order or chaos we are striving for in our music. But improvisation studies have also taught me that everything contains its opposite. To tend to a field, you have to engage with chaos, and a wild thicket has an order and a purpose in an ecosystem. It turned out, for me, that working on music became the most practical choice because it was a job where I was prepared to work very hard. Eventually, I paid back my student loans teaching music at an elementary school in downtown Toronto.
Trying to figure out this one.
Now you should be passing the back of an old stone house. This is the Street Tree Collection. My walks with Chris Early, the biologist here at the Arboretum, taught me that many of the guiding principles in natural sciences have changed. Modern practices wouldn't necessarily create a collection like this, tidy rows of species selected for their conservative image.
Now, historically, once again, are often used as street trees. Mm-hmm. And so some of those are things that we would never suggest now. Like all those maple trees that have the red leaves.
Yeah.
Those are a special Norway maple called Crimson King. And yeah, we would never, ever, 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 ever tell someone to plant a Norway maple.
Okay.
Because it's invasive. It's not hardy in ice storms the same as a sugar maple might be. It's just, so things have changed. So
for a long time, when I worked at the school, I hid my past from people. We were a tight community, but I tried to maintain an image of someone who was warm and positive, not someone who battled depression or anxiety. My biggest fear was that my father's history would be found out and that people wouldn't want me working with kids. Keeping up appearances is costly. Brené Brown says that if you're trying to fit in, you don't really belong. Once you've passed the clearing of street trees, you'll go through a path that will lead you to a bridge. Stop on this bridge. Depending on the time of year, there might be a stream that you can see underneath it. The stream might be covered up in reeds and grasses, or it might be dried up. It's a settle stream. But it still gives life to these water plants, and it's big enough to warrant the bridge, isn't it? And bridges always have a different vantage point, one where the forest clears and you can see in all directions, including below, above, inside, and out.
Here I am talking to Dawn Matheson, the artist behind this project.
But then when I was in my 30s, the police had contacted me because my father was had been arrested for some new crime, and they wanted to establish his history and get him labeled as a dangerous offender so that he would be in long-term incarceration. And so they asked me to come and testify in court. The whole process really tipped me into anxiety and depression, where maybe I'd had some times in my life before that where I was experiencing those things, but they weren't particularly marked and they weren't very long-lasting and they weren't particularly disruptive. This time it was different. It was really disruptive. And so I went and met with a cognitive behavioral therapist all through that process. It was really productive and helpful. But I'd say the two times that I've experienced great amounts of stress since then, it's very easy to return to that anxiety and depression. So one of those times was when we kind of moved here and life changed a lot. And then I'd say the other time has been COVID, and just COVID as a parent. Mm-hmm. And then like the work that I came to do at the university is very much inspired by those experiences and like how to put the difficult stuff to use, to good use. Mm-hmm. And because I do believe in that kind of thing a lot.
Up ahead, you'll come to a gravel lane. Turn left and head to the paved road. This is College Street where the cars are. Now is when this walk is a little dangerous. I need you to be very careful. Take good care of yourself and only cross the road when you're confident it is safe. You made it. Follow the little dirt road off the paved driveway to the left of the fire hydrant and carry on straight ahead.
The testimony against my father was awful. but it was life-changing. I had to literally face my abuser and come to terms with the ways he'd changed my life. I had to admit to the fears he had introduced me to and to the ones I was still holding on to. When the trial was over, my husband and I decided to start a family.
Time to put a stop to this. Go back and pick.
When my child was born, more upheaval followed. Our landlord died, and the estate sold our house where we rented. We had very little time to move, but some very good friends here in Guelph told us of a house across the street from them. After 38 years of living in Toronto, we packed up and moved to the city, knowing very little about it. We didn't know what we would do for a living or how it would all work out.
When you come to the crossing of the two dirt roads, turn right and head up the hill toward the spruce trees. At the top of the hill, stay to your left.
The transition took a long time. We were new parents in a new home in a new city. In order to find my bearings, I did a lot of walking that first year. Through my neighborhood in the ward, through trails along the river, and through the Arboretum. As my kid grew older, we started coming here more and more. The combination of groomed gardens and wild paths always offered new adventures. We were free to get lost and find our way again.
Stay on this grassy path until you come to a clearing. To your right will be birch trees. They're planted in rows. But since the experiment that planted them is over, they've been left to grow in naturally.
In those early years, I was still commuting back to my job teaching in Toronto. As my mother said, it was a bird in the hand, but it was exhausting. It meant 12-hour work days. After 3 years, I decided to leave the school whose community I really was no longer a part of and start over, again, as a master's student at the University of Guelph.
If this were easy, I wouldn't be here. If this were perfect, I wouldn't stay.
Have you reached the field yet? Do you see rows of trees with tags on them? This is a part of a project to crossbreed elms that are resistant to Dutch elm disease. The idea is that by encouraging diversity, we might develop several resilient strains instead of only one that can resist the disease.
This is Sean Fox. He's a research associate at the Arboretum.
And what was the name of the guy that you worked under?
Henry Cook.
Okay.
Yeah, so actually this is the spot we last were together when we worked together.
Ah.
It's actually right, actually almost right about here. That's crazy.
We're standing right
there. Yeah, we had put these trees in. This was his work, and he was diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Nice.
But yeah, this is, his work was really just to find these elm trees that were surviving Dutch elm disease, which wiped out most trees in North America, most of the elm trees, and some of the big parent trees were still surviving. So it was testing and figuring out why, and then basically making copies of them to bring here.
Walk down this field and through the gap in the wall of spruce trees. Follow the path to the gravel road. Now I want to share a secret magical place with you. This is where I thought my tree would be when I started this project. Turn right and then immediately left at the Arboretum side trail sign and wander down among the tall grasses under the black locust trees.
This is a newer trail in the Arboretum and it connects to my neighborhood across the river. Venture in as far as your curiosity will take you. Sometimes the most productive journey isn't the most direct one. Now turn around and look at where you've been. If it's summer or early fall, the grass may make a bed and those trees may make a canopy. I love the way this space is like a magical fairy home, the kind I searched for when I was a child looking for safety.
When you are ready, return back to the road and make a left turn and follow the curve around to your right.
You're now in the oak and the beech collection. This is the road I use to get to school if my timetable allows me enough time to walk up from my house. Depending on the time of year, this field will be full of dandelions or little eggs and butter. Queen Anne's lace, purple vetch. There are cottonwood poplars on your left.
and the growing oaks and beeches on your right.
As you approach the bench on your left, slow down. Do you see her? That's her up ahead on the right.
Do you see her? This is my tree, and this is how I met her.
Take time to get to know my tree. If you like, sit on the bench and observe her. In all her glory, will I tell you the story of the day I found her.
Walking along this path, I was headed back to where my car is parked, the kiosk, when the branches of this tree were leaning out in the spring right in front of my face, almost as if to turn my head towards it. This is the copper beech. In the spring, when the leaves are very new, they have a halo of fuzz around them that I thought was so mysterious.
Peter Schiller, the elder from Six Nations, had a very profound observation about this tree.
Something you'll find about this tree is the leaves are quiet.
That day in May when I first met her, I was drawn in further to her branches because lichen was growing right on them. And I thought, wow, she's supporting so much life other than her own. As I wandered around her thick, capable trunk, I realized she was a dedicated tree and she'd been here for a long time. That day, the sun was so bright and her leaves were so orange and copper, and the sky was so blue and the contrast was absolutely fetching. She was planted in 1972. 4 years before I was born, following what I understood to be an invitation, I let her branches support me in all the ways that I needed that day. I'm walking in under the branches. I think the thing about this tree is that I know that it can hold me. I'm trying to put the phone in a spot so I can climb up. I feel like this tree can hold me, but I just... be sad. I'm almost 50. So I have a lot of memories and experiences and mistakes and imperfections. Sometimes I just want to go away. To, you know, like 30 days or something. And then I don't want to abandon my family. It's so hard to ask for the help that you need. Or it is for me. Other people maybe feel I don't know, maybe they're more natural at it. I don't want to say entitled because I think it's a good thing. But I suck at it. I couldn't even get out of bed this morning. What's my kid gonna think of me? I want to be a good mom, but I feel so worn out and beaten down. I love my kids so much. Maybe if I can talk to a tree first, I can figure out how to talk to people. This is beautiful. It is beautiful. Sitting here. The leaves are kind of a red or, I don't know, rusty color. And against the blue sky, it's just so striking. And because they're just budding, they're making all these beautiful little patterns. I'm gonna stop the recording and take a picture. I'm so glad she called me over, off the focus on the path, to take time to notice everything she has to offer. In return, I can offer her my company. And my breath. These days, I'm doing pretty good. I have no regrets. And that's my story. And that's how I learned to draw a tree. A place I can come whenever I feel burdened, burnt out, and in need of support. Now that our time together is over, it's up to you to choose if you'll continue in the direction you've come from or in the direction you were going. I hope, no matter what path you take, that you enjoy your walk back through the Arboretum.
Waiting to be taken away. In a bath of self-pity, face to face with the same old fears. Is it courage or cowardice that makes you stay? You think it was easy, casting dreams aside and hoping to get by in silence. Just when you figure you taught them how to hide, they come tumbling out with so much violence. Of showing up just when you try to put some speed on. Ain't no smooth ride this trip of growing up. Well, it's hard to say what they'd call freedom.